It's 6 hours, Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa, coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Twin tragedies involving migrants on the high seas. The UN Security Council calls an emergency meeting on Ebola. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. The International Organization for Migration said Monday at least 700 migrants from the Middle East and Africa may have drowned in two incidents on the Mediterranean Sea last week. On Wednesday, some 500 Syrians, Palestinians, Egyptians, and Sudanese are presumed to have lost their lives when their boat sank after being rammed by human traffickers. Elsewhere, as many as 200 of 250 African migrants attempting to reach Europe are missing and feared dead after their boat capsized off the Libyan coast Sunday. Libyan Coast Guard Unit Commander Ali Sarti said they found a broken and damaged vessel with immigrants lying in the middle as it sank. He said they were rescued. This year alone, more than 100,000 migrants have reached Italy, but nearly 3,000 are believed to have perished. The UN Security Council will hold an emergency meeting Thursday on the growing Ebola epidemic that has claimed more than 2,400 lives in West Africa. U.S. UN Ambassador Samantha Power chairs the rotating council presidency this month.
Because of the increasingly grim situation, particularly in Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea, the United States has requested an emergency meeting of the Security Council this Thursday, September 18th. I don't need to tell any of you how unusual Security Council debates on public health issues and public health crises are, but at this moment it is crucial that Council members discuss the status of the epidemic, confer on a coordinated international response, and begin the process of marshaling our collective resources to stop the spread of the disease.
The last time the Council held an emergency session on a public health issue was the HIV/AIDS crisis in 2000. This is VOA News. President Obama today travels to the Atlanta headquarters of the Centers for Disease Control for a briefing with health experts on the Ebola outbreak. Josh Earnest is a White House spokesman.
The administration has already committed more than $100 million to address the Ebola outbreak, and this has taken a variety of forms, but includes commitments from USAID, from the CDC, and others to try to meet some of these needs. We've also seen the Department of Defense step forward and make some commitments as it relates to the expertise they have when it comes to logistics. This is all part of the whole of government approach that the president has directed in response to this situation.
So far, the U.S. has committed $100 million to fight the disease and is sending dozens of health experts to the region. Mr. Obama reportedly prepared to expand the U.S. effort to ask Congress for another $88 million in funding for training and medical equipment. In Brussels, the European Union's Humanitarian Aid Commissioner, Kristalina Georgieva, lamented Monday the time lost in the global response to the virus.
But now we recognize the magnitude of the crisis. And I stress again, we must look forward and not backward. It is water under the bridge. I hope we will draw conclusions for future crises. For this one, the mobilization is now.
Her commission has pledged nearly $200 million in the fight against Ebola. The top UN envoy in Libya, Bernardino Leon, who heads the UN mission there, warned Monday the rapidly deteriorating security climate, coupled with the political impasse caused by rival governments, has brought the North African country to the brink of protracted conflict and civil strife. Meanwhile, forces loyal to retired General Khalifa Haftar claim to have conducted an airstrike on suspected Islamist militia known as the Libya Dawn near Tripoli. A militia spokesman quoted by the Associated Press said one person was killed, five wounded. U.S. officials have in the past indicated such airstrikes were likely carried out by Egypt and the United Arab Emirates. The elected parliament meeting in Tobruk has accused Sudan and Qatar of supplying weapons to the Islamist militia. A court-martial in Nigeria has sentenced 12 soldiers to death for firing by firing squad for mutiny and the attempted murder of their commanding officer while operating against the Islamist militant group Boko Haram back in May in Maiduguri. Five others were acquitted. All have denied wrongdoing. The French press agency reports a court in Burundi has rejected pleas to release ailing award-winning human rights activist Pierre Claver Mbonimpa, arrested in May for alleging that members of the ruling party's youth wing were engaged in paramilitary training in nearby Democratic Republic of Congo. Mbonimpa suffers from diabetes and hypertension and was hospitalized at a clinic in August. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbate in Washington. Today is Tuesday, September 16th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. President Barack Obama will today, Tuesday, detail a robust U.S. response to West Africa's Ebola outbreak.
Our doctors and scientists are some of the best in the world, and we're going to deploy their knowledge and resources to try to help some of the governments in Africa meet the needs of their people and confront this very difficult challenge.
That's White House spokesman Josh Earnest. UN peacekeepers have been deployed in the Central African Republic. The on and off again South Sudan peace talks were again delayed yesterday. And is Liberia's vice president being investigated as part of an overseas group allegedly considering forming an interim government overseas?
The police director has written a formal letter to the Minister of Justice requesting that the vice president of the Republic of Liberia be investigated for his role, and Pierre Tape and Mr. John Malou also be investigated.
Philibert Brown is publisher and managing editor of the Liberia National Chronicle newspaper. A new poll says Lesotho citizens distrust their political institutions. And why are Rwandans not buying a new improved type of cooking stove? Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. President Barack Obama is set to outline his plan to boost U.S. response to the Ebola outbreak that has killed more than 2,400 people in West Africa. The president travels to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control, CDC, in Atlanta today, Tuesday, for a briefing with health experts who are leading U.S. efforts to stem the outbreak. VOA's Arul Pandey has more from the White House.
The president's visit to the CDC comes amid calls from West African leaders and international health officials for the United States to do more to assist nations that are struggling to keep up with an epidemic that the center's director, Dr. Tom Frieden, recently said is spiraling out of control. Near daily images of patients lying on the ground and left to die are coming out of countries like Liberia. White House spokesman Josh Earnest told reporters in Washington Monday that because of its capabilities, the United States has a unique responsibility to step up in the midst of this international crisis.
Our doctors and scientists are some of the best in the world, and we're going to deploy their knowledge and resources to try to help some of the governments in Africa meet the needs of their people and confront this very difficult challenge.
Earnest would not give details on President Obama's announcement Tuesday to increase the U.S. whole-of-government response to Ebola, but the Wall Street Journal on Monday quoted officials who said the president is considering sending more portable hospitals, doctors, supplies, and experts to train healthcare workers in Liberia and other affected countries. So far, the United States has committed $100 million towards the fight since March, with the CDC also sending 100 of its workers to the region, among the largest such deployments in the U.S. agency's history. White House spokesman Josh Earnest said the United States must do more.
Making an investment here early is critical to trying to snuff out this problem before it becomes a much more widespread problem. And that is the strategy that we're implementing here, is to try to invest early.
In a recent interview with NBC TV's Meet the Press, President Obama said while Ebola does not pose an imminent threat to Americans, containing the outbreak is a top national security priority.
If we don't make that effort now, and this spreads not just through Africa but other parts of the world, there's the prospect then that the virus mutates, it becomes more easily transmittable, and then it could be a serious danger to the United States.
In that interview, President Obama went on to say that the U.S. military would be helping set up isolation units and equipment while providing security for international aid workers dealing with the crisis on the ground. Arul Pandey, VOA News, The White House.
A new United Nations peacekeeping mission is underway in the Central African Republic, one of Africa's poorest and most fragile states, amid doubts over what peace there is to keep. Katerina Hoyer reports for VOA from Bangui.
This week, 1,500 troops from Morocco, Pakistan, Bangladesh and Indonesia, among other nations, join 4,800 African troops already deployed in the Central African Republic. A ceremony at the Mpoko Airport in the capital Bangui marked the official transition from the African force known as MISCA to the UN peacekeeping mission MINUSCA. It doesn't matter who changes their beret first. You all get to be in the UN mission, said Force Commander Cameroonian General Martin Tumenta, bringing down laughter as he reprimanded a group of soldiers who were a little too eager to change their green military berets into the UN light blue hats. The UN Security Council has called for 12,000 troops for its first peacekeeping mission in the Central African Republic. Around 6,000 African peacekeepers have been working in there since December, alongside with 2,000 French peacekeepers and 150 European troops. The new mission is almost double the current size. The African Union-led MISCA was deployed after a March 2013 coup plunged the country into chaos. While some stability has returned to Bangui, fighting continues elsewhere in the country between former Seleka rebels and anti-Balaka militias. A ceasefire deal signed in July and the appointment of the country's first Muslim prime minister has done little to restore and move the country towards reconciliation, one thing it desperately needs. Instead, deadly attacks occur almost daily. The UN Office for Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs says more than 500,000 remain displaced from their homes, including more than 4,000 living abroad as refugees. More than 5,000 people have died during the past 9 months, according to an Associated Press account. The UN mission is being launched after several failed international operations, and there are fears this mission may be no exception. This is Katrina Heye for VRA News in Bangui.
The director of Liberia's National Police says Vice President Joseph Boakai is now under investigation for allegedly being named in the newspaper article as part of a group of Liberians who are reportedly considering forming an interim government overseas. But the publisher and managing editor of the Liberian National Chronicle newspaper says he is in possession of a letter written by Police Director Chris Masekwai seeking permission from Justice Minister Christiana Tah to investigate the vice president and others. Publisher Philibert Brown called VOA Monday evening to say the Liberian government, through Police Director Masekwai, has violated his constitutional rights by preventing him from leaving the country.
We are publishing a series of articles pertaining to the misrule, the corruption in the country. There was a group that we refer to called the Liberian Leadership Forum, headed by Ambassador James Tietape and the Secretary General John Malu, and we said that these people were looking at the option of forming an interim government. And it was owing to that they came and closed the office down. As far as I'm concerned, we were never charged, we were never told, there was no legal process. Fortunately for everybody, those who are up to forming an interim government have come up in the open. They have said why they are doing what they are doing. They have not denied one aspect of the chronicle story, and right now it's the talk of Liberia. So we are wondering why are they still keeping the chronicle newspaper closed, and then I asked to leave the country to go to the States. I was denied that I cannot leave the country until the ongoing investigation is concluded. The ongoing investigation has long since been concluded. The police director has written a formal letter to the Minister of Justice requesting that the Vice President of the Republic of Liberia be investigated for his role, and James Tietape and Mr. John Malu also be investigated. The chronicle was never mentioned in their recommendation, so it still beats my imagination why the chronicle remained closed up to now.
Philibert Brown is publisher and managing editor of the Liberian National Chronicle newspaper. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. Police Director Chris Masekwai says Vice President Boakai is not under investigation. Instead, Director Masekwai tells me the police are investigating the Chronicle newspaper for its article claiming that the vice president is part of a group that is reportedly considering forming an interim government overseas.
The first matter is not under any investigation. I'm absolutely unfounded, and he is not. It was the Chronicle newspaper that dropped names, okay, mentioned names in their own publication, and it was his own making.
So he said that you have written the Justice Ministry that certain people, including the Vice President John Malu, were of people of interest, and that the Justice Ministry should commence some investigation?
No way. That is not true.
That is not true?
Yeah.
if he published this article, why wouldn't he his paper be allowed to publish? Are you disputing the article, or is the government disputing the article, or what does the government find offensive about the article?
Well, I mean, normally, James, I mean, in a situation like that, if anybody comes up with such an article, I mean, as a government, it's obvious that the government will make some inquiry. Because if you have a constitutional government in power, and then someone writes up and says that the interim government has reformed, and I think it worth looking into.
Mr. Police Director, forgive me. I was just trying to find out if the paper publishes an article, it doesn't make a claim on the Liberian government, does it? Does it lie on the Liberian government?
It's possible that whoever that he claimed was formulating establishing an interim government, it's possible that he lied on it. So that's the only inquiry that we're trying to look into. I mean, how did he get that information? Well, I mean, and that's why we are talking to him for.
Wouldn't it,
the person of interest.
Mm-hmm. Wouldn't it be incumbent upon those people that probably he might have lied on to bring charges against him instead of the government saying that it's going to close the paper?
Well, the issue with the paper being closed, that will have to come directly from the Ministry of Justice. And I think you might want to follow through from the Ministry of Justice.
He claimed it's the police that closed the paper, not the Ministry of Justice. And he's claiming that it's illegal under Liberian law for the police to order the closure.
See, you rather know that the police reports to the Ministry of Justice, right?
Uh-huh, yes. I do know, but the police are supposed to get orders from the Ministry of Justice. Is that correct?
Well, I mean, we report directly to the Ministry of Justice. We take orders from the Ministry of Justice as well.
So, Mr. Police Director, are you saying it was the Ministry of Justice that ordered the closure?
I did not say the Ministry of Justice ordered the closure. I said on the issue of the closure of the paper, I think it would be good if you can just follow it through from the Ministry of Justice.
So you are saying categorically that the vice president is now under investigation. And did you write a letter to the Justice Ministry to look into allegations that the vice president might be involved in something?
There was no letter that was written to the Ministry of Justice mentioning the vice president name that I'm aware of.
Police Director Chris Masekwai of Liberia was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, September 16th. Daybreak Africa time, 17 and a half minutes past the hour. The people of Lesotho are against military rule or any dictatorship, according to Afrobarometer's latest poll. The findings of the independent research group come as the Southern African Development Community, known as SADC, is making efforts to resolve the political disagreement in Lesotho's coalition government, which led to last month's alleged attempt to overthrow the administration of Prime Minister Thomas Thabane. Sibusiso Nkomo, Afrobarometer's communications coordinator at the Institute for Justice and Reconciliation in the Southern African region, tells reporter Peter Clotty that Basotho's overwhelmingly support democratic elections and reject military rule.
In Lesotho, the people are showing that they support the democratic process, but in terms of Southern Africa as a whole, Lesotho is actually at the bottom of the levels. So, for instance, in Lesotho in 2014, 50% of the people say they support a democratic system, whereas in 2012, they'd actually said that they support the democratic system by 55%. But at the same time, they've got really high levels of rejection of military rule, one-man rule, and any other form of draconian rule. So, and also, but the trust in political institutions is also quite low. So it's quite revealing also, because if you look at Lesotho's history, they've had coups, they've had a prime minister who ran the country for a very long time, not wanting to let go of power.
Can you give me the figures about the total rejection of authoritarian or military rule that you got from your study in Lesotho specifically?
Well, in Lesotho, over 70% of Basotho reject military rule. They reject one-person rule, but also they reject any form of draconian rule. So it's a case of you support democracy at a low level, but you don't want the same people to, you know, people who are non-democratic to be ruling you. And also it goes to trust as well. So, for instance, the opposition parties are at the lowest rung of people don't trust them. They trust them the least. Then the ruling coalition is trusted the next highest. And then in the middle, you've got the police who are trusted better, and then the army. And then you have religious leaders and traditional leaders who are trusted the most. So, for instance, religious leaders are trusted at about an 82% level, whereas traditional leaders at about 73%. So it's also a very complex picture to paint, because when we did our survey in May of this year, we found that we interviewed about 1,200 people, and with a margin of error of about plus minus 3%. And a 95% confidence level. So based on that, you start to see that Basotho are actually aware of what is actually happening in their country and who's doing what and how that's going to affect them.
Sibusiso Nkomo is Afrobarometer's communications coordinator in Southern Africa. He spoke with reporter Peter Colati from Johannesburg. The on and off again South Sudan peace talks, scheduled to restart yesterday in Addis Ababa, were again delayed for what the Intergovernmental Authority for Development, or IGA, calls logistical problems. Eskindo Feru is in the Ethiopian capital monitoring the talks and has this update.
The talks are, for the first time, moving to a relatively far location from the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. They will be held in the tourist city of Bardar, 178 kilometers northwest of Addis. And the government delegation has been there for 2 days now. I spoke to the spokesperson for the government delegation, Michael Lees, and he said he is waiting for the arrival of the HPLMA in opposition and the former detainees. Otherwise, according to him, all the stakeholders are already in Bardar and they are waiting for the opening of this round of talks in Bardar.
Is there any reason why they moved the talks from Addis Ababa to Bardar?
There has not been any statement from the mediator, from the Intergovernmental Authority for Development so far, and it's not known why they moved the talks to Bardar.
The SPLM in opposition have their representatives in Addis. Did you talk to any of their members about the next round of the talks?
I managed to talk to the spokesperson of the SPLM in opposition, General Lul Kwang, and he said they are going to leave for Bardar tomorrow and they will join the talks for sure. But he also added that they maintain their position on the signing of the matrix and on the proposal of the Government of National Unity. That's a proposal by the IGAD leaders regarding the formation of the Transitional Government of National Unity in South Sudan. He said they did not sign the matrix and they will not sign it unless Ugandan troops and other foreign forces withdraw from their country. I mean, regarding the formation of Transitional Government of National Unity, he said they are not ready to accept a proposal that will keep President Salva Kiir in power for another 3 years.
That was reporter Eskinda Faru speaking from Addis Ababa with John Tanza of VOA South Sudan in focus. A campaign to persuade people in Rwanda to buy a new improved type of cooking stove, which uses less fuel and is less smoky, hasn't succeeded, according to the stove's manufacturers. They say the public still doesn't realize this type of stove could save them money and protect their health, as well as saving trees. Nick Long reports for VOA from Kigali.
There are various types of improved cooking stoves in Rwanda. One of the most affordable is a combined ceramic and metal charcoal stove called a chanamake. 3 years ago, the Rwandan Ministry of Infrastructure approved a new, more durable type of chanamake fired in a kiln to prevent breakage. The ministry said it wanted 80% of households in the capital, Kigali, to be using this charcoal stove. The new type saves about 30% on charcoal compared with unimproved stoves and 11% compared to the old chanamake, according to the international NGO Practical Action, which helped to design it. But it costs about $7.50, whereas the old chanamake stove costs a little over $2. It's not known how many of the new chanamake are being produced in Kigali, but according to one of the manufacturers, the AJDR Cooperative, it's not many, and sales are falling because the government has removed a subsidy. Alain Nzanzabaganwa is treasurer of the AJDR Co-op. He says they're not selling many of their improved stoves, they're not getting enough publicity, and they're hardly selling at all outside Kigali. In the past year, he said, the cooperative sold just 1,600 of the new chanamake. Nzanzabaganwa thinks there are about six places in Kigali where the public can buy the new chanamake. One of these is a market in the Kimironko district. Deep inside this market is a stall with a few stacks of cooking stoves. There were none of the new stoves on display when VOA arrived there, but one was produced when we asked for it. It had a tag with the maker's certificate. The stove vendor, Laurence Uwamahoro, says she sells about 5 of this model each month and 30 of the older model. She said it was more economical than the other stoves, but when asked if she had one herself, she said no, as the $8 price tag was too much for her. Currently, Bloomfield says the cooking stove manufacturers don't seem to understand the importance of the retail side of the business. Nick Long for VOA News, Kigali.
Now for Daybreak Africa, sports, and here is Marco Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa sports news, we begin with athletics. Isaac Kiprop completed the 11.7-kilometer course in 53 minutes and 50 seconds to lead Daniel Rotich and Kibet Soyekwo in a 1-2-3 Uganda senior men's medal podium sweep for the second year in a row at the World Mountain Running Championships staged in Kase Dimasa in northern Italy on Sunday. Uganda retained the senior men's team trophy. Uganda's Philip Kipyego and Stella Chesang triumphed in the junior boys and girls events respectively. In tennis, Benin's Tunde Segodo beat the Democratic Republic of Congo's William Bushamuka 1-6, 6-4, 6-1 to win the boys' singles final at the International Tennis Federation's ITF Central and West Africa Junior Circuit Tournament in Lomé, Togo that ended on Monday. Mali's Abdoulaye Bagayoko and Sedou Diallo outplayed Nigeria's Edward Christopher and Abubakar Sadiq 6-4, 6-3 to win the finals of the boys' double. In the girls' contest, the United States of America's Ines Karim Vias dismissed Egypt's Nur Azuz 6-2, 6-0 to win the girls' singles event, while Nigeria's Sarah Adegoke and American Ines Karim Vias combined to dismiss Egypt's Nur Azuz and Turkey's Selene Hepa 6-2, 6-4 in the finals of the double contest. In netball, hosts Botswana outplayed Zimbabwe 41-37 as Uganda beat Zambia 53-48 at the Africa Netball World Cup qualifiers in Gaborone, Botswana on Sunday. The week-long contest has attracted 8 teams. Botswana, Kenya, Tanzania and Zimbabwe are in Group A. Group B features Namibia, Swaziland, Uganda and Zambia. Today, Tuesday, Tanzania plays Zimbabwe, Uganda face Namibia, Swaziland challenge Zambia and Botswana tackle Kenya. The final Finalists will join Malawi and South Africa at the 2015 World Cup in Sydney, Australia. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. U.S. President Barack Obama travels Tuesday to the headquarters of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control for a briefing with health experts about the Ebola outbreak in West Africa. White House officials say President Obama will announce in Atlanta new measures for the U.S. government to help fight the disease, which has killed more than 2,400 people in West Africa. And the International Organization for Migration said Monday that 500 migrants are feared to have drowned after traffickers rammed and sank their boat off the Malta coast last week. And that is it for this Tuesday, September 16th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Mark Ullman, along with our engineer Carl Sterling, I'm James Butte in Washington saying, have a nice day, Africa.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.